This is the part now where you develop an awareness of how your upper limit problem operates in your daily life so that you can bust out and break through. This is Jen Verheeren of Cadence Coaching. We talked in the last session about how the upper limit barriers can hold you back. Now we're going to talk about how you can recognize them. When you're upper limiting, you're doing something that is interrupting your flow of positive energy. In our performance project language, these are things that generally inhibit your ability to be in the zone and trip you into the fear cycle. Even if it's a low grade or chronic fear cycle and not acute, like we've discussed in relationship to riding through fear and nerves. I'm going to go through the most common self-sabotaging behaviors that are associated with upper limiting. See if you recognize any of these. Worry. This is the most common one. Worry can be useful if it's about something you can do something about and take action right away. But if you're worrying about something that you have no control over and cannot do something about imminently, then it's a sign that you're upper limiting. When things are going well, your brain will literally panic and scan for something to worry about that will prevent you from feeling too good or being too happy. Feeling truly happy is uncomfortable due to those pesky barriers and their thermostats that we talked about in last session. So once you've started worrying about the things you can't control, a snowball thing happens, and suddenly you're in the land of what-ifs and thinking about all the things that could go wrong. We start to justify these thoughts with more worry, and then they grow into doomsday scenarios. So how do you decide if a worry is useful or if it's upper limiting? The other day I was riding, and I started to worry that I'd left eggs boiling on the stove before I headed out to the barn. I really could not remember if I'd turn off the stove or not, and I started to worry that a fire would start and the house would burn down. So was this a legitimate worry? Yes. So I asked myself two questions. Is it something that could actually happen in reality? Yes, it could actually happen. A fire could start, or a month's worth of propane could be used up in a couple of hours. Question number two, is it something that I can do something about? Yes, again, I could go check on it or get my kid to run in and check on it or call my husband and have him check on it, which is what I did. I had not, in fact, left the burner on, but I was able to finish my ride worry-free because I took action. I have a client named Cindy who is a dressage rider and a small animal vet. She takes excellent care of her horses, and she constantly worries that they are going to be injured. She worries that they're going to get cast in their stalls or blow a tendon in the indoor footing. She worries that if she gives them a day off, they'll get rambunctious and hurt themselves. Two questions I have for her. Are these possible in reality? Yes, they're possible. Are they things that she can do something positive about right away? No, they're not. She already does all the right things. There's absolutely nothing she can do to guarantee that her horses will not be injured, barring bubble wrap or solitary confinement. So these worries she has are upper limiting for her because they stop her from riding forward, from going on trail rides with her friends, and from reaching her own potential as a rider. They keep her turning the thermostat down on her riding abilities so that she can avoid being truly prepared to show at I1 on both horses, which is her next goal. In this way, she keeps her internal barriers of avoiding risk and not shining in balance with the degree of success that she's able to achieve in her riding. Does this make sense? What worries do you have that you cannot do anything about, but that you spend energy on anyway? How do they serve your upper limiting? Be aware that there's a big part of you that may believe worrying is actually useful and will help you be prepared. This is utter nonsense, really. I love a line from the Tom Hanks movie Bridge of Spies. Tom's character, an attorney, is sitting across from his client who's about to be convicted of being a spy. He says to his client, "You don't seem very worried." And his client looks quizzically at him and says, "Would it help?" Deflection is another upper limiting behavior. It serves to totally shut out positive energy. We've all done it. Someone congratulates you on a great ride and you go on to disagree that it would talk about how it wasn't good and list all the things that were wrong with it. We deflect positive energy instead of receiving it and letting it sink in. This serves to make sure that our levels of pride and happiness do not exceed our upper limit. My client, Tara, is used to struggle. She's comfortable with struggle because her mother ingrained in her early on that people who had it easy were lazy and superficial. She learned to never let things be easy or to gain too much success because her subconscious belief was that she would be viewed as somehow undeserving if she were to achieve success. She found it extremely difficult to accept praise or acknowledge her own wins. She would respond to her instructor's positive feedback by arguing with her. She could not accept compliments and never wanted to appear as if she thought she was any good. The result of this is that she could not truly get into the zone and partner with her horse to the degree that she needed to compete in the meter 30 jumper division. She subconsciously maintained her upper limit equilibrium by constantly deflecting, which meant she never truly believed she was good enough to move up to that level. She had stops and pulled rails and missed distances because she could not let positive energy flow and learn to trust herself. Another upper limiting behavior is criticism and blame. Self-criticism and criticism of others are exactly the same. They're very addicting. Just as with worry, criticism is only useful if it's constructive and if you can do something about it. Imagine a boss who constantly criticizes his team for things they cannot do anything about. Will they be inspired to be productive and work hard? No. Will there be positive energy flowing to facilitate creativity and growth? No. Will they be able to learn and improve their performances? No, no, no. In this way, criticism serves to inhibit growth and success. If you do it to yourself a lot, you will become as disgruntled and discouraged as those team members. If you do it to others, you will not ever have to take responsibility for your own experience. Blame works the same way. Both are disempowering and keep that thermostat pretty damn flat. Notice that you may become more self-critical the closer you get to achieving an important goal or taking a big risk. This both blocks positive energy and provides your inner critic with an excuse to turn back and stay safely under that glass ceiling. Getting sick or hurt. This one seems so real, and yet we tend to think that it's coincidence when we get injured at pivotal times or sick when we need to be at the top of our game. Obviously, not all illnesses and injuries are upper limiting issues, but do examine this if you suspect that it might be a symptom of upper limiting for you. The director of an organization that I worked for once was a super high-powered, successful individual. She had lots of ambitions and was self-confident and a total go-getter. And she would get really sick every time she would get the opportunity to present a big proposal. It happened literally every time she got something she really wanted. Being sick would take her off her game, and she always had an excuse for not winning the proposal. It was really easy to see from the outside that this was a form of upper limiting for her, but as brilliant and aware as she was, she always chalked it up to stress or the weather. Had she been aware of her own upper limiting behavior, she could have examined that tendency and taken a more proactive approach to her health when she needed to perform at an extra high level or right after a big success. Once you learn to change your upper limiting behaviors, your upper limiting barriers no longer have any power over you. Suddenly, your set point for happiness goes up and you can handle more of it. Excuses. An excuse is an explanation put forward to defend or justify a fault or action. It's an explanation put forward to defend or justify a fault or action. Excuses are great for keeping you from having to test your upper limits. They often disguise themselves as reasons. Reasons are real barriers to action. Excuses are justifications for not taking action. Excuses can be habitual or based on beliefs that are not real. Maybe you decide that you cannot ride in the rain, or you cannot get up early unless you go to bed early, or maybe you don't have that tough conversation because it would cause the other person too much stress. My client Shannon wanted nothing more than to be able to ride consistently so that she could get fit and accomplish her riding goals. For years, she came up with excuses for not riding regularly. Her underlying upper limiting barrier was the thought that she was not worthy of being a good rider. She had been in a great riding routine when she was younger, but as she grew older, the self-sabotage became very persistent. She would tell herself she was being selfish if she rode before taking care of all her family's needs first. She would tell herself she was too out of shape and that she might hurt her horse. She would tell herself that if she rode one day, she did not have to ride the next. She would even make up potential ailments for her horse so that she would just hand walk or lunge in case he was sore or uncomfortable for some reason. She would make all kinds of excuses to cancel her riding lessons. She also happened to be an excellent rider. She'd sacrificed so much to have horses. But still, her underlying barrier was that she was afraid to be seen, to own her talent. The immature little voice in her head told her that she would be abandoned by all she knew if she actually became successful. She was not encouraged to shine when she was young, and instead, she learned to sneak her way out of fulfilling her dreams. The routines that she knew she needed to do in order to accomplish her goals became elusive, and she became increasingly frustrated with herself. Her excuses served to keep her from having to risk failure by actually putting in the effort. Therefore, she spent years of her own worst enemy wondering why she could not get healthy, enjoy her horse, and live out the life she wanted. Once she'd identified these excuses for what they were, she was able to change her upper limiting habits and create a whole new experience for herself as a rider. Integrity breach. This is one of the fastest ways to bring yourself down after venturing too far over your upper limit. Telling lies, breaking agreements, committing crimes, or picking fights are often common ways that your subconscious will ensure that you don't attain too much success. Think about Bill Clinton. This habit can be so inexplicable that you're not really even aware that it's a thing. So hopefully you have recognized what your upper limiting problem might look like. What is the hidden belief you have that dictates your success thermostat and comfort level with feeling good? What's the upper limiting behavior that habitually keeps you from getting what you desire? Are you willing to move through the fear in order to eliminate it? Take some time to write about this.